It's where political machinations to limit people's voting rights ends up ushering in 100 years of oppression towards the Black community. You see the same thing after the civil rights movement. It's almost as if the war on drugs was a response to that seeking of expansive power or expansive democracy. And I contend that after the election of Barack Obama across this country, you had forces who were very angry at the idea of a just and free United States. It feels like we are caught in this cycle, but the thing that breaks it is organizing. It's having community speaking with each other. It is training each other, engaging each other, understanding our history so that we can protect our democratic institutions and we could preserve the kind of self-governance that we strive for in the United States. I think we are at a critical moment in our country, and it requires sending organizers across the country, including Congress.
We want to thank you so much, Ana Lilia Mejia, for joining us, Democratic nominee for New Jersey's 11th congressional district. That does it for our show on Monday, February 23rd. We will be celebrating our 30th anniversary, Democracy Now!, at Riverside Church in New York. Juan will be flying in from Chicago. Nermeen Sheikh will be here. I'll be joining with Angela Davis, Naomi Klein, Maria Ressa, Michael Stipe, Wynton Marsalis, Masaba Butoha, V, Hooray for the Riff Raff, and more. See democracynow.org for details. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
All My Greatest Teacher Showed Me Love, a new mental health program hosted by Zan, providing tips and tools along with music, interviews to lighten and brighten in these uncertain times. Join the community every first and third Wednesday from 10 to 11 a.m. only on KBOO 90.7. All you need is love.
Independent media is now more important than ever, and we want to know how KBOO Community Radio can best serve you. KBOO's Board of Directors invites you to a community meeting on Saturday, February 21st at 11:30 a.m. at the Clinton Street Theater and online via public video conference. This is your opportunity to share feedback, offer ideas, and help guide the station's direction. The meeting will be followed by a social hour. That's KBOO Community Radio's community meeting on Saturday, February 21st at 11:30 a.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. For more information, visit kboo.fm/community26.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, City Council President Jamie Dunphy says council structure overhaul is a priority.
Portland Public Schools are under the microscope by Donald Trump's Department of Education.
And KBOO News reporter Dan Raphael wonders if boneless chicken wings can learn to fly.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, February 18th, 2026. I'm Dave Johnson.
And I'm Terrence Burns. Portland City Council meets tonight at 6 p.m. Their primary focus will be what to do with the extra unspent funds in the Housing Bureau that have been uncovered in recent months. At first, it was $20 million, then $40 million. Now the total estimated is to be $106 million, City Administrator Raymond Lee says. Some of those unspent funds are committed to projects, but not all of them. Most of the revenue comes from the fees collected from landlords and short-term rentals like Airbnb. Councilors from District 1, East Portland, put forward the Slow the Inflow resolution to allocate $20 million of those funds to rental assistance programs to help people stay housed. That was in December. Now that there's more money on the table, Councilors are likely to allocate some of the funds towards affordable housing programs, including building projects that have been strapped for cash. Competing proposals for how to spend the money are the primary focus of tonight's agenda, with 2 hours set aside for testimony, amendments, and debate.
Portland City Council will consider overhauling its committee structure Thursday. Currently, there are 8 council committees, and much of the first year of the new city council system was spent figuring out how they should work. Council President Jamie Dunphy said it was a priority of his to overhaul the committee system and make it more fair. A new proposal slims the committee down to 5. The first, Public Works, would encompass much of the work of the current Transportation and Infrastructure Committee and the Climate and Land Use Committee. Housing and Permitting is the second committee, mostly carrying on the role of the current Housing and Homeless Committee. City Life is the third new committee, absorbing the work of the current Arts and Economy Committee and the Labor and Workforce Development Committee. Then, there is Community and Public Safety, keeping a similar scope to before. The final committee is Finance and Governance, fittingly, a merging of the Finance and Governance committees. Forming this last committee requires the council to pass an ordinance to allow for a committee of the whole, since current city code doesn't allow for it. If passed, the new Finance and Governance Committee would include every councilor as a member. It would be tasked with overseeing the city's finances and budget preparation, executive appointments, city council structure, emergency responses, and more. Dunphy told OPB it would also be a place for councilors to work out ideas for policy before a formal council presentation. The new committee structure is on the agenda for the city council meeting at 2 p.m. on Thursday. If council passes the new committees, they'll take effect at the end of March.
The U.S. Department of Education has opened an investigation into a complaint accusing Portland Public Schools of flagrant racial preferencing by creating a Center for Black Student Excellence. The conservative Virginia-based nonprofit Defending Education, which opposes diversity, equity, and inclusion policies in schools, asked the U.S. Department of Education's Civil Rights Division in December to investigate whether PPS, in creating this center, violated Title VI of the Civil Rights Act and the Constitution's Equal Protection Clause. U.S. Secretary of Education Linda McMahon posted yesterday that her department would investigate Portland Public Schools, writing that, quote, discrimination disguised as equity is discrimination, end quote. Candace Gross, the district's communication director, wrote in December that the center, quote, represents our ongoing commitment to creating a welcoming and supportive environment for all students, not just black students, to feel seen, valued, and heard, end quote. The Center for Black Student Excellence is projected to open in 2 to 3 years and plans to offer after-school tutoring, summer camps, and other enriching experiences beyond the school day. The Department of Education assumes PPS discriminated against students based on their race, despite assurances the program will be available to all students. Additionally, the DOE's announcement cites data from the 2021-22 academic year that indicates Black, Native American, Latinx, and Pacific Islander students all struggle with third grade reading and lower graduation rates. Susan Parshall Perry, vice president and legal fellow at Defending Education, said, quote, the data is clear. Every student in every demographic is falling behind in Portland, and the city cannot afford to play politics with race or fast and loose with long-standing civil rights law designed to guarantee equity in education, end quote.
A new temporary restraining order issued by U.S. District Judge Michael Simon prevents Portland's ICE facility from deploying tear gas and other non-lethal munitions against protesters. The initial TRO went into effect on Tuesday, February 3rd, and expired yesterday. The latest extension pushes the order out to March 4th. Both TROs stipulate crowd control devices cannot be used, quote, unless the specific target of such a weapon or device poses an imminent threat of physical harm to law enforcement officers or other persons, end quote. The order also indicates federal agents cannot use tear gas, pepper balls, or rubber bullets for the sole purpose of clearing the ICE driveway or other or against protesters who refuse to obey dispersal orders. Protesters and journalists say that agents at the ICE building used tear gas without warning and that homes of local residents were damaged as a result. Judge Simon said there is, quote, good cause for extending the TRO to preserve the status quo and because lawyers with the U.S. Department of Justice have not disclaimed the conduct that gave rise to the original TRO, implying the federal government does not deny the tactics it continued to use and submitted no evidence to justify denying the extension, end quote. Simon issued the extension the day after Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield submitted supporting evidence and arguments to aid the plaintiffs in their class action case against DHS. The suit alleges DHS violated protesters' First Amendment rights and that they've been subjected to excessive force from federal agents working at the ICE facility. The lawsuit was filed in November 2025 by the ACLU of Oregon and attorneys from four other law firms on behalf of protesters and journalists. The Trump administration argues the use of force is necessary because it claims rioters and terrorists are assaulting officers and vandalizing federal property. Oregon Governor Tina Kotek and Portland Mayor Keith Wilson issued a joint statement in support of the new extension. Their statement says, quote, the ongoing actions of federal agents undermine constitutional rights, erode public trust, and escalate tensions in our communities rather than protect public safety. We will continue to speak out, pursue every legal avenue available, and defend the rights and safety of people in Oregon, end quote. The federal court will conduct an evidentiary hearing to consider a more permanent ban on Monday, March 2.
The proposed millionaire's tax, which would impose a 9.9% tax on income exceeding $1 million, passed in the Washington State Senate on Monday and is headed for the House. Supporters say the state is facing an affordability crisis and the tax would apply to about 1% of residents, helping the vast majority of families. Isabel Charlet reports.
The Washington State Senate passed a proposed millionaire's tax on Monday, which supporters say is the first step toward balancing the state's regressive tax code. The proposal is for a 9.9% tax on income over $1 million and would impact less than 1% of Washington households. Annie Cooklick with the Economic Opportunity Institute says with nearly a third of residents in the state unable to afford their basic needs, the tax would help take the pressure off.
We are living in an affordability crisis for working people. And we are also living in a time of great wealth. Washington is wealthier than ever. So the wealthy should pay more in taxes as a percent of their income so that working people can pay less.
Cooklick says currently the lowest income households in Washington pay nearly 14% of their income in taxes, a rate over three times higher than what the wealthiest residents pay. State Republicans argue the millionaire's tax would open the door to more income taxes. The bill is now headed to the House for debate. Republican Representative Travis Couture blames the state's $2.3 billion budget shortfall on what he calls a decade of runaway spending. But Cooklick counters that Washington's operating budget has actually shrunk from 5 to 4% in the last 30 years, even while the personal income of state residents has increased by more than 170%. For example, she says in 1994, the state was spending much more on education than it is now.
And instead, what we've prioritized in our state is providing tax cuts to the wealthy and to big business instead of ensuring that we are funding these public goods that we all rely on.
Cooklick anticipates the millionaire's tax would bring in about $3.5 billion annually, which would go towards tax relief for small businesses, an expansion of the working families tax credit, child care subsidies, and education. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
Civil rights leader Jesse Jackson dies. The Utah GOP gathers signatures for a ballot measure to repeal a ban on gerrymandering, and North Carolina political parties reach a truce over voter registration. Well, that story and more, it's Zimone Perez with 2026 Talks.
Welcome to 2026 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Don't stop with the way things are. Dream of things as they ought to be. Dream. Face pain. But love, hope, faith, and dreams will help you rise above the pain. Use hope and imagination as weapons of survival and progress, but you keep on dreaming, young America.
One of the nation's most important black leaders, the Reverend Jesse Jackson, died yesterday in Chicago. He rose to prominence in the 1960s and was in Memphis at the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. After leading civil rights organizations for years, Jackson ran for president in 1984 and 1988, winning surprising support on a progressive and populist platform, even in states with segregationist histories. He was 84. Utah Republicans say they have far more signatures than needed to get a measure on November's ballot that would allow partisan redistricting. The signatures still need to be verified, and critics say they were gathered with misleading and deceitful tactics by paid canvassers. Some 2,000 people have requested their signature be taken off the petition, a number local election officials call unprecedented. The ballot measure, if passed, would repeal a 2018 constitutional amendment designed to stop gerrymandering. The Department of Homeland Security is still shut down as Congress battles over policy issues tied to the agency's funding. Democrats have offered a 10-point list of demands they say would make federal immigration officers conform to standard police practices. Republicans oppose changes, including a ban on masks and the requirement that warrants have to be issued by a judge. Nebraska Republican Representative Don Bacon says there's agreement on things like body cameras, but he says Democratic leaders are lashing out at the entire department over immigration enforcement.
They're doing this out of anger at ICE and Border Patrol, but they're already funded. So who's paying for this? It's the Coast Guard, FEMA, TSA, Secret Service. I think the better option, though, is being American first. Let's see if we can find some low-hanging fruit that both the Democrats and Republicans can support.
North Carolina's political parties have reached a settlement over incomplete voter registrations. They have decided to let more than 70,000 voters stay on the rolls in spite of problems with their applications, while election officials work to resolve the issues. Meanwhile, advocates in the state say police in the capital city now have equipment which could violate people's rights. The Raleigh police can now shoot a GPS tracker from the front of a police car and attach it to a person's vehicle. Don Blagrove with Emancipate NC says that is actually a form of search, which would violate the Fourth Amendment.
The Raleigh Police Department requires much more extensive training and oversight before it be given the broad breadth of violating someone's constitutional rights.
A pro-cryptocurrency super PAC is wading into contested Democratic House primaries in Illinois. The Fair Shake PAC is making seven-figure ad buys against state lawmakers who support regulating cryptocurrency. Fairshake is also using its $190 million war chest to target industry critic Democratic Representative Al Green, among others. I'm Simone Perez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Jake Thomas from Street Roots about his latest article. Clawed back, Oregon lawmakers are considering a bill that would codify how prison officials can haul people back behind bars if they have been released in error. Critics say it would enshrine overreach. At 6, it's Art Focus. At 6:30, it's Culture Free Culture Radio. At 7, listen for Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather, get ready, a winter weather advisory in effect for areas above 500 feet. So it's scattered showers mixed with snow. Expect an overnight low of 33. Tomorrow, that winter weather advisory stays in effect with the chance of minor accumulation of the white stuff early in the day. High tomorrow, 44 degrees. Today in history, in 1959, Ray Charles records his iconic hit, What I'd Say, at Atlantic Records in New York City. The quote of the day is from Mexican filmmaker Luis Buñuel, who said, quote, age is something that doesn't matter unless you're a cheese, end quote.
With significant pressure from Alaskan fishing communities, the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council voted to implement stricter hard caps on chum bycatch in the Bering Sea. The highly debated and long-awaited decision aims to protect declining salmon stocks and crucial food resources for Alaskan tribes. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Federal fisheries regulators last week approved some limits on Western Alaska chum bycatch in the Bering Sea. The highly debated and long-awaited decision aims to protect declining salmon stocks, a crucial food resource for Alaska tribes. Ayolna Niden with the Alaska Desk reports.
The North Pacific Fishery Management Council voted to set a Western Alaska chum bycatch limit in the Bering Sea pollock fishery. The council said the move will balance protections for Western Alaska salmon returns while also allowing pollock fisheries to continue their harvest. Council member Nicole Kimball voted for the motion. She says it reflects best available Western and Indigenous science.
I think it's going to change behavior. I think it's going to reduce Western Alaska chum bycatch. I'm sure, as per usual, nobody is very happy, but all of the discussions have really helped inform the outcome.
The trawl fishery in the Bering Sea near the Aleutian Islands is focused on pollock, but boats also scoop up other types of fish. That includes chum salmon, some of which migrates to Western and Interior Alaska rivers and is a crucial subsistence resource there. But chum runs have been declining, leading to repeated fishing closures in some communities. Council member John Mahler is Alaska native, originally from Unalaska, and is a commercial fisherman. He says he's fortunate to put fish up each year and feels for those who can't.
I know how important that is to me, how important that is to my family, and passing that on to my children. I get that. And my heart is ripped out speaking with all of you that are living in the rivers right now that don't have that same ability that I have.
The council voted to support a motion that sets a limit to Western Alaska chum bycatch. Exceeding that limit would trigger a partial closure. Rachel Baker is the deputy commissioner at Alaska Department of Fish and Game. She presented that motion. Several members who voted against the motion said it isn't likely to provide a meaningful improvement for salmon returns. But Baker argued,
we're at this table used to thinking about large volumes of fish in tons. And we heard in testimony that four fish were able to provide the needs for a pot batch.
The plan goes to the National Marine Fisheries Service next, before it can be implemented. In Anchorage, I am Alena Naiden.
The recent premiere of season four of AMC's award-winning detective drama, Dark Winds, saw tension and resentment threaten the romantic relationship between two main characters. Brian Bull has more.
After Bernadette Manuelito quits the U.S. Border Patrol and returns to the Navajo Tribal Police Department, it looks like a carefree and intimate rekindling of her romance with fellow officer Jim Chi. But Lieutenant Joe Leaphorn shares a life decision with Manuelito that will shake up the force, a secret which Chi inevitably learns. Feeling affronted and mistrusted, a schism occurs between the couple. Actors Kiowa Gordon and Jessica Matten talk about bringing this conflict to their characters.
Leaphorn's coming from a place of understanding the matriarchy system. And in order to protect this relationship dynamic, she doesn't feel like she's lying to Chi. She feels like she's actually protecting him from what he doesn't need to know. You know, she's dealing with a lot of the PTSD of her just killing a man in season three. And sometimes you just don't want to tell the truth right away because you might actually spiritually just drown because it's just too much.
And he is dealing with his own demons that he's been pushing away, but now they've come to collect and having to deal with that and trying to maintain your professionalism when you're working with the love of your life at the same time. And so there's a lot of dynamics being played out.
Meanwhile, an investigation takes the pair and Leaphorn to Los Angeles. Gordon and Matten say much of the filming still happened in New Mexico. New episodes of Dark Winds air Sunday nights on AMC. Brian Bull, National Native News.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
American civil rights activist and presidential candidate Reverend Jesse Jackson passed away Tuesday. Jackson led the civil rights movement for decades following the assassination of Dr. King in Memphis, Tennessee. Dan Krull from KORC Corvallis has more.
On February 17, 2026, civil rights activist, ordained minister, and political figure Jesse Jackson passed away at the age of 84. He was recognized as one of the most prominent civil rights leaders of the late 20th and early 21st centuries. Back in 1972, he made a special appearance on Sesame Street, episode 402. He was joined by a large and multiracial group of kids on the stoop at 123 Sesame Street as he recited his poem, I Am Somebody.
Ready on the stump?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. I am
somebody.
Somebody.
I am.
I am.
Somebody.
Somebody.
I may be poor.
I may be poor.
But I am.
I am.
Somebody.
Somebody.
I may be young.
I may be young.
But I am.
But I am.
Somebody.
Somebody.
I may be on welfare.
I may be on welfare.
But I am.
But I am.
Somebody.
Somebody.
I may be small.
I may be small.
But I am.
But I am.
Somebody.
Somebody.
I may make a mistake.
I may make a mistake.
But I am.
But I am.
Somebody.
Somebody.
My clothes are different.
My clothes are different.
My face is different.
My face is different.
My hair is different.
My hair is different.
But I am.
But I am.
Somebody.
Somebody.
I am black.
I am black.
Brown.
Brown.
White.
White.
I speak a different language.
I speak a different language.
But I must be respected.
But I must be respected.
Protected.
Protected.
Never rejected.
Never rejected.
I am.
I am.
God's child.
God's child.
I am.
I am.
Somebody.
Somebody.
Give yourself a big hand.
The voice of Jesse Jackson in 1972 on an episode of Sesame Street. That poem, I Am Somebody, was performed by Jackson as early as 1963, and he continued using it after forming Operation Push in the early 1970s. Push stood for People United to Serve Humanity. Jesse Jackson passed away on February 17, 2026, at the age of 84.
CBS refused to allow Late Show host Stephen Colbert air his interview with Democratic Texas U.S. Senate candidate James Tallarico, concerned that Federal Communications Commission, led by Trump administration appointee Brendan Carr, would retaliate against the network. Colbert said, "We were told in no uncertain terms by our network's lawyers, who called us directly, that we could not have Tallarico on the broadcast." The 15-minute interview aired on YouTube instead. Last month, the FCC Media Bureau issued a guidance stating that daytime and late-night talk shows featuring interviews with political candidates must give equal time to opposing candidates, canceling a decade-long exemption these programs had. Last week, the FCC launched an investigation into whether ABC's The View violated equal time's rules, with its Tallarico interview earlier this month. Ana Gomez, the lone Democratic commissioner on the FCC, said of that investigation, quote, "The real purpose is to weaponize the FCC's regulatory authority to intimidate perceived critics of this administration and chill protected speech. That is not how a free society operates," end quote. Since Colbert announced the interview cancellation on Monday, James Tallarico has received over $2.5 million in campaign contributions.
It's been settled in court. Boneless chicken wings can still be called wings even though they contain no wing meat. Go figure. This is the result of an Illinois man, Amon Halim, who sued Buffalo Wild Wings when he found out that the boneless wings he'd bought were not actual chicken wings with the bones removed. Judge John J. Tharp Jr. dismissed Halim's claim, saying it has no meat on its bones. Despite his best efforts, Halim did not drum up enough factual allegations to the state claim. Buffalo Wild Wings said that context clues make clear the nuggets cannot be made of wing meat, and that wing refers to the style of cooking, not a chicken body part. Jug Tharp agreed with the company, saying a reasonable consumer would not think that boneless wings were made of wing meat. But do reasonable consumers realize that boneless chickens can't fly?
Take a deep breath. Trump says it doesn't matter what chemicals are in it or where they came from, just that the profits of the oil companies, coal-burning power plants, and other polluters get a letter higher. And those made ill by what we breathe increase the profits of healthcare and pharmaceutical companies. Every sip of bottled water contains a little of the plastic bottle. It's a driven consumer economy, like the old cattle drives, replaced by giant festering feedlots that become the burger delivered to our closed window apartments and labyrinthine complexes. We consumers are the product and the suppliers of lifeblood capital to those daylight vampires that never get enough. Not only polluted air, but polluted air waves. We're poisoned by the media we know we're ingesting, and by every other message only our cell walls can hear, unable to not eventually surrender. Even if everyone in the country had voted for Trump, he'd still not give a damn about us. Maybe the biggest profit makers will care about us once we start dying off and can no longer buy anything. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
That was KBOO News reporter Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, February 18th, 2026. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Josh Salem, Dave Johnson, Dan Raphael, and Althea Billings. The producer is Dave Johnson, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Zamon Perez, Antonia Gonzalez, Isabel Charlet, and Dan Kroll. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Dave Johnson.
I'm Terrence Burns. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/